SiriusXM Stars special presentation.
Norma Kamali presents Hey Baby on SiriusXM Stars 107.
Hi everyone. My name is Norma Kamali and I'm here to talk about fashion, wellness, and empowerment. So here are my questions. Can a bad hair day take you down? If you're feeling a little fat and your pants are too tight, do you feel not quite up to the best you can be? I know it sounds ridiculous, but we all know. Another question, have you ever felt the desire to be loved so desperately, which we all women do, that's one of our fabulous traits, and you've let yourself be objectified in the search for that love? That's kind of a universal one, I know that. And every woman in our world has issues with food. That I know for sure. And I asked a friend of mine who works with women in Afghanistan, and she said, oh no, Norma, you think Afghani women don't have issues with food? Yes, they do. So yeah, all women have issues with food. And do you think the fashion industry is responsible for image issues for women? Well, these are a few of the questions that we really have to cover today. And the reason I am so passionate about talking about these issues is that I've been a fashion designer since 1967, and I've seen a lot of strong, beautiful, wonderful women and had the great pleasure and honor to dress them. And yet, every one of these women through the decades, including every woman today, have issues that seem so bizarre and extraordinary. And they're absolutely universal. Every woman in the world has these issues. And every woman globally suffers from a common experience. And that common experience is objectification. And I discovered this through the years in my quest for trying to empower women and help women feel good about themselves. I would design clothes that would make women feel good, and that meant me feel good. And I thought I was accomplishing something with that. And then I got into wellness, and I shared all the information about fitness, health, beauty that I possibly could, and I still do, so that when you take off that dress that's empowering you, the body that's underneath feels good too. So you feel good about yourself without your clothes. You're a better partner. You enjoy sex more. You enjoy life more because you feel fit and healthy. But what was that little kind of chip in our heads, that emotional kind of issue that we all have that still take us down? So I really thought hard about it, spent a lot of time, and it wasn't until I saw Bridesmaids, believe it or not a usual movie that I would see, and I saw gorgeous John Hamm, irresistible, in bed with a young lady who was allowing herself to believe that if she let herself indulge in a relationship that was certainly for his convenience and not hers, that somehow he would turn around and fall in love with her. And so when I left the movie, I thought to myself, I really hate to say this, but I wasn't with John Hamm and I wasn't in that particular situation, but I have certainly done that. So then I started to interview women that I was doing business with and say, have a second, can you tell me, this is what I saw in Bridesmaids. Did you ever have an experience like that? Unanimously, yes. So I thought there are some unanimous things that we do as women. We all have issues with food. Why do we have issues with food? Why do we let ourselves be objectified because our need for love is so great? Why do we do these things? So at that time, when objectification became the obvious kind of topic for me to learn about, I started to interview women and ask them if they had incidents of objectification that they wanted to talk about and kind of explore. And I realized I needed to kind of dig deep and discover what my issues with objectification were and are. And I realized they happen every day and I never talk about them. And my first experience in high school was I was thinking, okay, what do I want to be? I want to go to FIT. I want to be a fashion illustrator. My first job out of FIT, I go on a job interview and I walk into this office in the garment industry. I hear my mom's voice saying, get a job, pay for your art supplies. And I'm very proud of my portfolio. I worked very hard on it. And the guy's got his feet up on a desk and he's eating a tuna sandwich. And he says to me, young lady, put your portfolio down and turn around for me. And I was horrified. And I just remember standing there thinking that he was the power in the room. And as I was turning around, I was so embarrassed and humiliated, I left in tears. And I never, ever told that story to anyone. In fact, it wasn't until a year ago that I was able to even talk about it. And even as I tell you that story today, I feel what I felt at that in that moment, at that time. So I've had many instances of objectification, but the worst thing I would always think was to ever talk about it or to confront someone who says it, because it kind of made me look smaller. And then I realized that when other women would tell me their stories of objectification, their eyes would fill up with water and they'd look, their faces would change. And they actually would admit that they never told anybody. This was the first time they were talking about it. And that the humiliation and the embarrassment is so painful that they wouldn't want to. So it was at that time that I realized that if you layer all of these incidents of objectification over the years, your self-esteem gets chipped away, chipped away, chipped away, and your sense of who you are and how you look is also infiltrated. And I really felt there has to be a solution to this. And maybe the first step is to just talk about it like they do in AA. People get up and they say, this is what happened. And each time you cleanse yourself of a story, you're freer. And you inspire other women then to tell their stories. And then they inspire other women to tell their stories. But the solution that I thought that would really make the difference would be if men became our advocates. And if at 18, I would have gone home and said, Dad, I need to talk to you about something. This is what happened to me on a job interview today. I know that my father or any other girl's father would in that moment be so horrified and in more pain than he can imagine that any time any of his buddies at work or at sports or wherever he may be would say anything to a woman that would create that painful feeling, he would be an advocate and dissuade them from going in that direction. So my thought is men really are going to be the ones that change our lives. Men are going to be our advocates. But it's up to us, first of all, to cleanse ourselves, share the stories with each other, but then talk to the men in our lives that love us and care about us. And by doing that, they will be our advocates. So not too long ago, I interviewed a few fabulous women who I thought had interesting lives that dealt with objectification and did not affect their success. And our success doesn't have to be affected, but our self-esteem is. And each one of them shared their story with me, and we did a Sirius Radio special. And I'm going to tell you that Cyndi Lauper, if you think girls just want to have fun video, was just a throwaway video. It was not, if you remember it at all or if you ever see it. It was about the male figure in her house objectifying her mom and her grandma. And then Venus Williams, you know, I asked Venus if she felt that if she felt a little fat or out of shape, could she play a great game of tennis? And she said, absolutely not. I couldn't do it. She exercises 4 hours a day, 2 hours in the gym, 2 hours on the tennis court, but can be taken down by just feeling a little heavy. Christine Quinn, who is, you know, an amazing woman who is breaking ground just in her existence in New York City government, could possibly be mayor of New York. And her life growing up in New York and then a decision to marry her partner, stay in politics, be very genuine, authentic, and honest about who she is and what her goals are, and then, you know, possibly be mayor of New York, gave a fantastic interview. Gloria Steinem, the queen of this topic, you know, if it weren't for Gloria and the women of her time, especially in the 70s, for screaming and yelling and making noise to bring attention to these issues, we wouldn't be having a powerful conversation about it now. We wouldn't be able to communicate with love through the men in our lives to have them support us. So they made great strides for all of us. And Gloria was just an incredible interview. Margaret Cho, I hope you all know who she is. She's a Korean comedian who still owns the territory. She's so unique. Her life experiences are hysterical when you hear her version of growing up as a comedian in this culture. Talks about her incidents of objectification and her way of handling it, obviously through humor. And then Mika Brzezinski, I'm a Morning Joe fan. I have to admit, even though I'm here at Sirius Radio, I enjoy watching Morning Joe. And Mika Brzezinski is in a man's world, a man's political world, and she holds her own. She presents herself in a very dignified way, and she's smart and bright and very forthcoming and honest about issues she's had with food and relationships and career. And so we're going to be hearing little clips from that. So those of you who haven't had the opportunity to hear the special, it was a 2-hour special in December, we'll get to hear little clips of that right now. So have a listen. We'll be back in a minute.
Norma Kamali presents Hey Baby on Sirius XM Stars 107.
Gloria Steinem.
I was a writer living in New York, being discriminated against but not objecting to it, really. I couldn't get political assignments, even though the guys who got them were less experienced than I was, or I couldn't get an apartment because they thought you weren't financially responsible, or if you were, you must be a hooker. You know, I mean, all these things were happening to me, but I was trying to avoid them individually. I saw the parallel of the civil rights movement and women inside the civil rights movement and inside the anti-Vietnam movement who, I mean, we loved those movements, but women in those movements were in the same position in many cases as in the rest of society. Mm-hmm. So it dawned on everybody gradually by contagion, or many people, that we had to have a women's movement. You know, nobody does it for you. You have to speak up for yourself.
Margaret Cho.
So I just think, like, stand-up comics that are women are often my favorite because they have to work so much harder to get to where they're going, because you have to surmount all these other things that are happening, yeah, with the audience, and a kind of objectification that happens when they just see women in this male job. You know, like, I think women in entertainment are certainly constantly scrutinized for their body, and, like, if we're, like, not conforming to a certain body type, it's a really tough thing. You can always, like, hear that voice.
Venus Williams.
Body image is definitely a big issue for women, and especially when we're encouraged to be perfect, which is... impossible. People aren't given an option. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, you're forced to look a certain way. I feel that you should be able to choose who you are.
Mika Brzezinski.
I actually think, especially professional women, I wrote a book in the past year. It's called Knowing Your Value.
Right.
And I think that book really spells out how women should define their relationships with anything. Mm-hmm. A man, a sister, a brother, a husband, a boyfriend, a boss. It's a long journey that I went through and came out the other side on quite well. And so for me, it's sort of about an all-encompassing lifestyle of getting the respect that you want from other people, but starting out by commanding that same respect for yourself. And it literally is a philosophy that I live by now and works very, very, very well for me.
Christine Quinn.
I don't know why people do that. They say to other people, it's not going to work out. I think it's because they're often afraid to try themselves. Yeah. And if somebody else succeeds, it'll only point out that they never even tried. But you have to make a conscious decision, and it's hard, to not listen to the naysayers, who can be other people, but the naysayer can be your own head, too. And you have to decide you're just not going to listen to the negative voices.
Joan Jett.
And I think maybe there are a couple kinds of objectification.
Yeah.
That's part of life. It's part of feeling vital, is to be able to find someone else sexy. But there's a way to do that, to be respectful, to not even let them know it, that you're looking at them and find them attractive. Mm. And then there's people that are very crass and objectify women in a very crass way. And that's done on purpose. But I think to find humanity sexy is part of why we are who we are. It's why we have sex organs. I mean, so I think a healthy objectification is exactly that. It's healthy.
Cindy Lauper.
Because I'm from a Sicilian descent, the whole generation before us, all those people have been more than objectified. They've been derailed in their life. I went to one thing where there was books that were just found that women wrote because they weren't allowed to write in Sicily, to write about any of the things that went on. There's one book that I read, Behind the Back Door. It's a Freedom Press thing. But there has to be a joyful way of dealing with this. And the one thing that you have to remember, regardless of what people or the society takes from you, you have to stand up. You can't let somebody take your joy. I learned that there's little things that are magical all around you every day that are happening. When the big things don't happen, there's little things. Don't forget to watch what's around you, because whatever you focus on is what will happen more of, you know.
Okay, we're going to take a break now, but I ask all of you to think about a story that you would like to share to start the cleanse, to start people talking. Lots of women's voices talking all around the world would be a beautiful thing. So let's start right here. Be back in a minute.
Sirius XM Stars, special presentation.
Norma Kamali presents Hey Baby on Sirius XM Stars 107.
Hi everyone, it's Norma back again, and we're going to share our experiences and start the cleanse. So we have a caller from Philadelphia. Her name is Miriam. Hi, Miriam.
Hi. Hi, Norma. Can you
hear
me?
So what would you like to share with us, Miriam?
Okay. I'm 53 years old. I have done a lot of incredible things in my life. I have really focused on my dreams of being an artist and being an actress and a massage therapist and all kinds of things that, you know, over the years. And I love you. I love your work. I love your clothes. I love fashion. And I walk around and I still have the same or very similar upsets about my body. And it upsets me that I have that at this point in my life. And listening to you and listening, you know, just this morning, just listening to everybody, all the different people sharing Cyndi Lauper and all these great, amazing women, what they have to say. And then you're talking about, like, you know, starting a cleanse. I think, wow, that's actually a brilliant idea. What your analysis, your analogy of, you know, AA and, you know, food and women and their bodies. And so I just, when you said, you know, what are some of your, I don't know if you said memories, but just a memory came up for me when I was young, a very early, oh, I know, when you were talking about your fathers and your and the men in your life, to have them be an advocate. I have a husband, I've been married 21 years, and I just recently started to say to him, I really want to lose some weight. And I'm seeing him as a friend more. But even, it's still a little threatening. I don't feel fully free with him. I really don't.
Miriam, I'm going to tell you something. I think this, you're in control here of this, and we all are. And I believe that we're all obsessed with how we look, how much we weigh, what we eat, what we put in our bodies. And the by taking control and talking about of all of these situations that happen to us, is the call to action for me is do something about it, talk about it. So besides talking about it, one of the things I'm passionate about is fitness and health and beauty and how it all comes together. I'm not a doctor, I'm a fashion designer, but I approach wellness through vanity. And so as soon as you feel that you can take your clothes off and stand nude in front of a mirror, your sex life is going to improve, your feeling about how you love yourself will improve, your sense of self and image will improve greatly. Will you be 100% and not have any issues? No, because then we have to cleanse all of those incidents of objectification out. But you can take control. So I'm going to make a little suggestion, and it's actually a suggestion for everyone. A few years ago, I decided that I was going to eliminate processed food from my diet. And if you just start with sugar, just start with sugar, Miriam, I promise you, you will see changes happen. If you take sugar out of your diet, and now you have to look at what's in the food you're eating, and you don't eat food that has high fructose corn syrup or sugar, you will start to see a change. And then start to look at processed foods. Any food that's processed, it has chemicals in it, and that hugs the fat, and it makes you an addict to bad food. If you stop the addiction, which is comes through processed food, you can then eat all you want of good food and not gain the bad weight. You just don't gain it. And if you start exercising, whatever it is, it doesn't even matter. You can get a hula hoop. I just ordered a hula hoop online because I hear it's great for your waist. And I'm challenged a friend of mine to a hula hoop countdown contest in 2 months. So I have to get my act together. So I give you the challenge. In 2 months, you should be ready for this hula hoop contest. Go buy a hula hoop. They're cheap. And start. And your self-interest will be the most important thing in your life. I want to start asking, thank you so much, Miriam, for calling in. I want to start asking women in the audience about incidents in their lives or situations. And let's start in the audience here. Would you like to begin?
Hi.
I
was actually thinking of something completely different, but as you were talking, a new story came up. I had a boyfriend when I was 18, and he drew a picture of me that pointed out all the bad things about my body, you know, where my rolls were, where I, you know, how my breasts look, etc. And, you know, I left it off. I actually hung it on my wall. And I would look at that I hung it on my wall and I looked at it every day and felt terribly. But I felt somehow that I needed to look at it, sort of like a self-punishment thing. And I feel very emotional about this. But
I know. And you know what? We're all totally feeling with you.
Yeah. Just really interesting mm-hmm. how he was sort of objectifying me. And in turn, I embraced that and sort of punished myself.
So did you feel that he cared about you? How was it done, through malice or through care, or what do you think his motive was?
I felt like he was poking fun at me and
oh really
sort of but not in a positive way sort of saying what I needed to improve mm. on.
Now the interesting thing is, if you were to draw a picture of him, what would that picture look like? How perfect was he? Not so perfect,
no,
I'm pretty
not
sure.
At all.
Yeah, I'm thinking not so perfect. Mm-hmm. We don't know perfect people. And but this is a great kind of look at, first of all, we're women are kind of sensitive about hoping not to hurt people's feelings. So we wouldn't think about drawing the picture unless it was to try to save their lives because they were really eating all kinds of crap and doing terrible things. But the fact that you didn't think, what if I draw a picture of him and see how he feels, is so much because we are so self-absorbed about our insecurities and the self-esteem issues we have, that we just get stuck with it. So you put it up on the wall and punished yourself with it instead of thinking, I'm going to draw a picture of him now and his, like, funky hair and goony eyes, whatever. So I think that that's an important thing to kind of always look at, that what happens to women and the way we respond, very different from the way men react. How about someone else here? I'm going to point right here. Yes, there you go. Thank you so much.
This was hard to come up with, but I came back to an incident that happened when I was in my early 20s and I had my first real job. And I was working with children and I was working with a boy and I was tutoring him. And he had an assignment. And so we sat down at the computer and his assignment was he had to create a list of things he liked. And he pulled up a photo of a woman in an outfit. Mm-hmm. And he said, I like this. And I was looking at him and I was thinking, how do I explain to this boy? Because he didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And he clearly thought that he was supposed to like this. This is what was popular. You were supposed to like women who looked like this.
Well, what would describe the photo? Because it was she wearing a pinstripe suit and a turtleneck?
No.
Or okay,
no, she
I'm
was
thinking
posing.
Maybe not.
It was
okay.
It was like a fantasy photo of a woman, like okay. a sort of like a superhero kind of outfit, but not really a superhero.
Okay.
And I was trying to explain that that's not what this was about. That was someone. That was a person.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't understand, because his friends were looking at photos, and that mm-hmm. was what he was supposed to mm-hmm. like, women who were really tall and had big hair and whatever else. And it was just such a tough moment, because I was the adult and I was trying to impart knowledge on him, but he was being raised and around other children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. How do you get someone to make that leap
right.
when the environment is not encouraging it?
Well, I think we can't dismiss the male hormone thing going on, and it is how we procreate. So it is nice that he's attracted to women in that way, in some whatever way that he is. But I think it opens another question for me, and a question that I'm always challenged with, because I'm a part of the fashion industry and I make little bikinis. And so people often say, well, what about you? You know, don't clothes objectify women? Don't clothes kind of what you wear tell a story of who you are? And so the superhero sexy image is a story that this is projecting to this young boy. But in a more serious way, the way we dress also tells a story about what we want to say. And I really am a firm believer in the fact that clothes do not objectify a woman. And I'll give you a great example. I watch the Olympics. I love to watch sports. And I think women that are successful in sports are just so empowered. And if you remember the gold medal volleyball players, our team, our girls, our little blonde girls out there, not so little, they were so powerful. They had on the smallest bikinis. Did you pick up on that? I picked up on that, and nothing's popping out, and they're rocking it. And I thought to myself, they're not being objectified by those bikinis, not for a minute. But if you took those bikinis and you put them on two girls in a music video where the dialogue, the words of it were about ho and everything else, then all of a sudden she's objectified. She's an objectified woman. And it's not the bikini. It's what the situation she's in or what she's saying about herself. Which opens up yet another conversation. What you wear and how you dress is the story you want to tell about yourself. So sometimes we want to objectify ourselves, and for maybe all the wrong reasons, but we do it subconsciously. A big area of concern and a need of a lot of discussion are the 12 to 18-year-olds, and we have an 18-year-old in the audience, and I'm going to ask her about this too, that dress like they're wearing swimsuit-length dresses with platform heels and low-cut tops, and they're projecting an image of a woman, and they have women's bodies. They're projecting an image of a woman, and they have no real conscious understanding of what they're doing, but their desire for love and to have a boyfriend is so great. It's something they don't even understand. And we've all understood, we all know that. We all totally understand that. But now there's someone gave permission to this whole group of tweens to say, you can dress this way. And the painful experiences of objectification that come out of it have a long-lasting effect on how they're going to relate to men in the future. And I'm sure you've all observed it. So now that I've put my 18-year-old on the spot here, why don't you tell us what you think about about that, and if you witnessed that amongst your friends and schoolmates?
Well, I go to school with a bunch of girls, and, you know, I know a bunch of girls that are size 2, and I know girls that are size 12, but I don't know one girl that is confident in her body. And I think that's the problem. All the girls around them don't feel confident, so they have problems with their self-esteem. And I suffer with the same thing. I want to feel confident, but because the people around me are always putting this pressure on me to look a certain way, I can never feel confident in who I am. And I think that's why girls dress that way, to get the attention.
Right.
You know, because sometimes, you know, guys want to see girls in tight dresses and high heels and have that slutty mm-hmm. look.
The slutty look or the hoe look, which is what everybody talks about. No, and it's everywhere. So I want to ask you a question. You say you have issues about your body, and I have to say that the ages, and for me, and I'm speaking personally, but I think it may not just be me. I remember from middle school to high school, and especially around 16, I just could not believe what was happening to my body. I mean, it was doing all kinds of crazy things, and I didn't know what to do about it, and I had huge self-esteem issues. I thought for sure every girl in my class everywhere was so much prettier than I was, so much more together than I was, and that my nose kept growing, you know, my Lebanese background, the nose grew, my face hadn't filled in yet, I was feeling puffball, and I thought, this is a disaster. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do. How am I going to deal with this? And then somewhere along, I think from 18, 19, I started to kind of settle into it. And even though I slept on my face hoping my nose would turn up, I grew up in an Irish Catholic neighborhood, so it was very challenging. Everyone had a little turned up nose. I realized that's not going to change. I started to kind of get my own style. And I thought, I'm not going to be the prettiest girl. I know that. That's not going to happen. So I'm going to have my own look and my own style, which is how I started to develop my kind of personality with clothes. And once I made my statement, my body adapted to it, and I had a lot of confidence about it. And I think your body will adjust to your confidence and how you feel about yourself. And you are unique. You are your own special beauty. And the thing is not to think about how someone else looks. And like the fashion industry tells us, you have to be rich, thin, gorgeous, just like this picture. But if you allow yourself to think about your personal beauty, I think it's a winning kind of message. I'm going to go for a break now, and we'll come back and continue conversation.
Sirius XM Stars, special presentation.
Norma Kamali presents Hey Baby on Sirius XM Stars 107.
Well, we're back talking about empowerment and objectification. And one of the big call to action that I ask everybody to do that's listening to this is, from here on out, when you have an incident of objectification, call a friend immediately, tell a coworker, talk to anyone about it. Don't let it stay with you longer than it has to. Don't let the day end without getting it out and talking about it. And we'd love to have all of you join in the movement and share your stories. So I'm told to call out this number again. It's 888-947-8277. So call in. And what I'd love to do is talk to another member of the studio audience.
Hi. You know, I was thinking about this inner voice that we all have that somehow we don't measure up to. And is it just women that have this ideal, or do men also suffer from this ideal that has been created? I just had a situation with a good friend who felt that she was with her soulmate. I mean, he was somebody he'd button her sweater, brush back her hair, and but he said, she didn't meet the criteria. Her hair is starting to thin a little bit. She's had a couple of kids, and he struggles so hard with that image of who's going to be on his arm, and it's devastated her.
Well, I mean, from the time we're babies, we're judged by the way we look. And I think part of the image of a man's success is who he has on his arm. And all people are going to judge her first by the way she looks. And then if she's smart, that would be a nice thing too. Maybe not too smart in some cases, but I think that that's just, this has been going on since the beginning of time. This issue for women is universal, and it's part of every woman's life from the beginning of time. Now, there are other terrible, terrible things that come out of objectification, like sex slavery and like, you know, the terrible abuse of women in physical, mental, of all kinds, and many more terrible incidents of objectification. But we all are judged by the way we look first. And we work very hard to be more. And part of my campaign slogan is, we are more. And once a guy who's maybe catcalling to you on the street knows who you are and connects to this human being that's there, and that you could very well be his sister, that's how similar you are, he will have a very different feeling about it. So the stories, I keep going back to the stories. The stories are critical in turning this around and making a change. So I'm asking you all to really make this part of an agenda that's the part of your life going forward. The goal for this, the ultimate goal, is that every little girl baby that's being born today, it enters a world where objectification is so profoundly unaccepted by society that if anyone should attempt an incident of objectification, they would look down on that situation. So think of how invincible she can be if she doesn't have these issues of self-esteem or of image, and is almost on a level playing field as men are in the way they feel about themselves. Think about the power of women who are basically nonviolent and strong and invincible, what the world would be like. I mean, it'd just be an incredible place. And how great relationships will be, how much better the relationship between a man and a woman would be when we feel better about ourselves. They will love us even more because we're so strong and we feel good. We're not weak and needy and dependent on them for who we are. I mean, think about that. I'm going to take a call from Melissa in New York City. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Norma. How are you?
I'm good.
I have a question for you as a fashion designer.
Yes.
How do you feel that the fashion industry plays into the view that women have of themselves? Do you think it makes them feel not good enough, like they need to live up to a certain image or expectation?
Yes, I think you hit it right on your head. On the head. The fashion industry. I'm part of an industry that wants to create a mysterious kind of ideal of beauty and of the ultimate. And in the quest for artistically doing that, we also do another thing that's hard to kind of deal with right now for me especially, and that is we present women in a way that is so unrealistic. Nobody can be that thin and live a real life. Nobody can be that extraordinarily beautiful unless they have an airbrush machine doing their face every time they leave the house. Nobody can meet that kind of sense of perfection. And what we have to do is understand that is a fact, that nobody can. But I think the fashion industry will react to women who are strong and say, we want a representation of who we are, and that individual beauty is beautiful too. And I really try to hire models that are very full of personality and look like they eat and enjoy life. And I go out of my way to do that, and I think it's very important. But it's not so impossible to understand why this ideal now is so important in our lives. Think about the Academy Awards, and think about the red carpet, and think about the role fashion plays in an event that has to do with acting, the art of acting. I mean, it is an art form. And I don't know about you, but more news was talked about. And the profound question of the evening was, who are you wearing? And all of these women who are these incredible actresses who deserve such, you know, profound praise for what they do in transforming themselves are reduced to objects. They are objectifying themselves and are reduced to objects because now they're judged on how they look. So the fashion industry is a powerful player in this event, and the fashion industry probably receives more publicity than the movie industry. It's an odd thing. So many people say that they turn the TV off after the red carpet, and I think, oh my God, I mean, I love movies. There's no way I have to see it. But I really think that's an interesting fact that now this change is happening, and how we look and what women look like becomes, it's never going to die. It just perpetuates and it goes on. But it's an interesting thought that this great actress who transforms herself now puts on a gown and becomes an object. Her hair, her face, her skin, her eyes, her jewelry, her nails, her shoes, her dress. What happened? What happened? Something's off, but you know, we love that. So I'm going to ask someone else in the studio audience here to kind of share their souls. How about you? Yes.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, I grew up with three sisters, and they all had they have nice turned up noses, and I don't. And my mother favored the prettiest daughters, the two really pretty daughters, and they're more classically beautiful. And then the two of us, like, we had I was born with a crossed eye, and my other sister had something wrong with her eye. So we weren't perfect. You know, we had something wrong with our eyes. And so I remember when I was growing up, my sister that my mother loved, who is in fact very beautiful still, said to me, I always thought there was something wrong with people that wore glasses. You know, it's like some defect of character. And this whole thing with my mother and what we were like chattel, you know, the best looking one was, you know, displayed for society. And I always felt ashamed of my looks. And it started with my mother, I believe.
Mm. Well, you know, because she was subjected to it, too. I mean, it just went down a long line. And sometimes I think being too beautiful works against, you know, things come to you and life is very easy. And the other girls study harder and have to work harder to kind of build their credibility for who they are. And then all of a sudden you're not so pretty anymore. And oops, what happened? So it's tough. I don't know if it's better to have a big nose and not be so beautiful, or to be so perfectly beautiful out the gate and then deal with aging and not being beautiful. So it's still the process. It's still that same thing. And I want to just repeat again that the whole purpose for me putting a lot of energy and love into this is I've been fortunate through my career to live my dream and to have a job that I love, and to find that my job was to do whatever I could to share information I had to empower women. And I really feel my life goal is to do whatever I can to empower women, whether it's through clothing or through anything that I learn and can share about fitness, health, and how we can feel good about our bodies and ourselves. And then to really do everything possible to start cleansing and getting our self-esteem and image issues where they should be, where they've never been, wherever in anybody's life, and to really pull it together. And there is not one woman that escapes this. The most powerful women in the world, if you think of them, think of all the incredible women we love, they don't escape. They don't escape it. Hillary Clinton, this most fantastic woman, the press deals with her as an object. And how can they? How dare they? And they will do it until we tell our stories, until we share and everybody knows the pain involved. And I really believe in my heart, men love us. They really do love us, and they don't want to hurt us. There are some crazy people, and that's men and women, but men really will benefit from us feeling better about ourselves. And we have to help them understand what they are doing that's painful so that they start to change the way the conversation goes when it's between men and women. And the show is closing, and it seems like we just got started. And I promise you that I am going to be continuing this and dealing with different types of objectification in different places and talking more about it and writing about it. And I hope you help me be a part of my campaign and make it your campaign, our campaign, and share it with your friends and your family. And thank you all so much. It's been so fantastic. I appreciate it. You guys are great.